Welcome to Prague Will Find a Way Proguecast. I'm Jonathan Block.
And I'm Jay Valade. Today we're going to talk about the Decemberists, who are a Prague-adjacent, if not outright Prague sometimes, band.
Big Ten. Prague's a Big Ten now.
The Big Ten. We should change it to Big Tent.
The Big Ten podcast. Well, we do, you know, I've often thought, and we'll talk about this with Decemberists, because there's some, you know, different styles and whatnot.
Of course.
You know?
So the reason that we're talking about them is my wife and I just went to go see them a couple weeks ago in New Haven, and this is kind of a report back about the show.
And this is kind of interesting, because this is more old school, where they're touring before the album is really out.
Correct.
You know, most right. people don't do that anymore.
Right. And they are doing, which is now the...
Four songs. It's up to four of the songs are out.
They're doing what everybody seems to be doing now.
Okay.
In advance of their of an album coming out, because of the, I think, the lack of people getting physical product.
Yeah.
Not a lack, but the decline of the physical product.
Right. More people are consuming music.
Yeah, by streaming. What they're doing is they're releasing song by song over the course of a few months ahead of the full release.
Okay.
Which is interesting, because you get to the bites of it, but I also like to hear an album unto itself. But it also keeps it on your radar.
Now, this tour, are they playing a lot of the album?
Yeah, they're playing a lot of this new album.
Okay.
So there were songs that they played that we had not heard yet, and songs that we had just recently.
And they're the kind of band where people are okay with that.
Oh, yeah.
At the live show.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Although, you know, as happens with most bands, that the new stuff that people don't know as well, it's bathroom break time for some people.
Right, yeah.
So when the lead singer... be it Colin Molloy or whoever it might be, says, here's a new one that you haven't heard yet, invariably people get up to go to the bathroom. Versus me is the opposite. It's like, I want to hear the new songs because I haven't heard anything before.
It hasn't changed. It's never changed.
Nope.
Just a quick aside. When I saw Genesis in 82 or 83, it was the Three Sides Live tour.
Yeah.
And they played Supper's Ready. A lot of people, even who were there, so think of the time. I mean, they were familiar with Duke and Abacab, but they would start, and it starts quiet. People were getting up and going to the bathroom and like, what? So ever since then, I'm like, nothing surprises me.
Yeah. I usually have, this is a total aside. I have like a song in my head.
Right.
When they play that, I'll go.
Yeah, when you play that, you'll go.
It was the big generator tour. I'm like, when they what was it? When they play Almost Like Love, I'm going to the bathroom. And they open with Almost Like Love.
it's like a sitcom thing where you walk in the door, you're ready to sit down, and they play that song, and you're just like, what? And you just turn around and go home. So they got you right off the bat. Yeah, but the good news is you got it off the bat.
Yeah.
Bad news is you probably didn't have to go to the bathroom right at the beginning of the show.
That's my point. Anyway, so we saw them up in New Haven, and it was a really good show. We were right on the balcony, in the front row of the balcony. So it's an interesting venue because it's standing on the floor and then seated in the balcony.
Okay, yeah.
But if you buy one or the other seat, they do not let you, like,
Commingling, yeah. It's not general admission.
No. So the view from down below is sometimes nicer, but when you're in the front row of the balcony, it's
right, but
it's
did you really cool. feel like standing?
No, not at all. Yeah, that's why we got the seats. So
good. You have a good, nice overview.
So they had this really cool stage set, which was fun to watch from the distance. They had the five regular members of the band, and then they were supplemented by two more people: a woman singer and a male kind of multi-instrumentalist who, added horns or extra drums or whatever needed to be done.
Was it a full crowd?
Oh, yeah.
Full crowd?
Yeah. It was pretty packed.
Merch? What kind of merch?
Tons of merch.
Did you buy any?
I didn't buy any merch this time.
Why?
Price?
No. Nothing spoke to you?
I had a lot of it, because most of these places have a lot of vinyl and this and that and the other thing. And I was like, well, I've already got a lot of the pieces that they have here from a music standpoint. And then as far as the t-shirts, I mean, I got this t-shirt a million years ago.
Right.
But,
and you're not a hat guy.
Right.
So. I'm not Saturday. I don't know if they have separate hats or beanies.
I don't need like 15 different baseball caps.
Right. Yes.
So.
You only need one, and it's got the Roger Deaneyans logo on it. Right. Right. That's all you need.
My John Anderson Elias of Sunday World one. if they had the new vinyl there, I would have bought it.
Right.
But they didn't. So,
so they're really holding the release.
They are really holding the release back.
That makes sense.
So, but it was really a neat show. They started out with these like lights in the center of the stage that they came and they did almost like an acoustic set.
Okay.
Everybody there singing and playing some mellow songs, new songs, old songs. And then the lights got taken away and then they just became the full band. Now, the reason that we're talking about them as a prog thing, most of their stuff as they're playing their set list, which ran the gamut of their catalog, but also included a lot of new songs, is not really 100% prog.
Of course not. Right? No.
But they did play Crane Wife, which is proggy, and then they played Severed, which is kind of one of their heavier songs.
Right.
But it became this kind of extended, really psychedelic sort of proggy piece.
Right. I mean,
which was cool.
Yeah,
right?
But
and then they're back into some of their regular stuff. So right. I mean, they are a roller coaster ride when you see.
Right. You listen to them, and you know you can hear, depending over the years, you know you hear Fairport Convention or Steel Eye Spam, and then you hear some XTC, and then you hear a little bit of the Jam, you know, and then you hear, you know, it's like a lot of different things.
Some of their albums are like.
And it's funny because we were talking before, and we were just talking about people coming to concert dates and stuff, and. You were saying, oh, Billy Bragg's coming here. And I was like, that's fun. And I didn't say anything, but I'm like thinking in my head, that's funny you said that, because when I was going through preparing for this episode and listening to some of the December stuff, there's a point where I don't know if it's King is Dead or where the style
right
changes.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, well, they kind of got a little Billy Bragg in them now. That's just what it seemed to me. You know, they got a little kind of snarl.
Yeah.
90s snarl too. It was almost like that. But to me, they're, you know, again, prog Big Ten or whatever. I mean, I also think of prog's like a big highway and there's all these side roads, right? Yeah. But it's a state of mind or just a way of doing music, right?
Absolutely.
It's not just this band. Right. It's not, it has to be 5/4 and it's got to be this and it's got to be that. It's more from even the musician standpoint, like I want to do what I want to do, but I'm like actively trying to expand or break barriers or just, you know, you do something that is, you know, following the muse and not following whatever it is.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes it succeeds and other times it isn't. But to me, it is. It's an approach. It's a way of approaching.
It's a philosophy.
And it's different in every, like, if you're really into jazz, it's like, okay, well, there are parts, all of jazz is improvisational in nature, but there's some more classical elements, but then there's like real free parts of it that people even who like one thing, but it's more of an approach. It's a state of mind. It's like, how am I as a musician or as a listener? Well, what do I want?
Yes, I agree, because they are not in your, you know, they're not your traditional prog band, but then the encore was a 20-minute long song that is going to be on their new album.
Was that Joan
Joan
in the Garden? Yeah.
And it was really cool because it goes through the moves.
Right.
It has this build up primary section, then this kind of mellow, ethereal, even industrial noise kind of center section.
Yeah.
And then the end section, which is full on keyboard solo, rocking. And it's a fun song.
There's Mellotron Choir in there. So that completely does it. I mean, obviously the earlier stuff in Crane Wife.
Yeah.
You know, to me, they in that era, they were more prog. Now, they're American. You can only get so prog. You know, you can only get so prog. But it was always, to me, more from the English folk rock, the Fairport Convention and that, which to me, again, that's another avenue. But to me, that's prog. There's prog elements to that, for sure. It was the time. It's just coming from a very English place.
It's true, because they, and, you know, being a Yes fan, I can't really speak as much to this, because the lyrics lyrically is it's miles apart, right? But Colin Molloy is a great storyteller in his music,
right?
And his lyric. So it's kind of an interesting proggy approach, though, because I mean, you listen to some of the stuff on Crane Wife and you listen to The Island, and I'm like, well, there's King Crimson,
right? Exactly, you know, exactly. I mean? That album, and there's songs that are medleys,
but they
go through different bands, you know, you can hear kind of different touch points. They're not aping anybody, you know, they're always, and again, you know,
it's always the Decemberists, which is the another key to it being sort of
they are an American band, so there's an Americana element to their music always from the beginning, even though I always felt those kind of English folk touch points. As they've gone again, I know a lot of people call, you know, King is Dead as like the demarcation where they, you know, but they, to me, as they went on, even though there's elements in each album of something else, to me, there's a strong Americana. I don't like Americana roots. It's just, it feels,
but
it's
it
like,
is.
Yeah, it is. Like, I mean, some to me, you know,
some of those albums that came after Hazards of Love, because they had this build, right?
Yeah.
They started and they were doing their kind of quirky, their own thing. And you could tell it was the Decemberists still are the Decemberists. They have, even though they might go from one sound to another, you could tell it's the Decemberists. And it's not even just Colin's voice. It is just their approach to music and songwriting.
It's the atmosphere, and the instrumentation, just the whole.
They moved on. They did the Tain, which was this.
Because he's done solo albums too, right?
He started out in a band called Tarkio.
Right.
But he hasn't really done solo albums per se. Okay. His solo albums are like little cover song.
Okay, because so I did see.
EP. Okay, Colin Molloy sings The King.
Yeah, we'll show the crowd because
sing Sam Cooke, and he's got another one which I think he does Morrissey, and he does.
Saw some stuff online on you know Apple Music, and I was like, oh, okay, he's got underneath where they show bands you might like
not quote unquote a solo album se. It's more like he does the Brian Ferry Outside of Roxy Music.
Gotcha. That, you know, and do they have any live albums?
Yeah,
is
they do.
One?
They have
a couple. Okay.
Well, they have.
So you got. Do your show and tell. We'll talk. For those who don't watch the video, so here's another reason why you want to watch us on YouTube, because we do show and tell, because we can't do sound and tells.
Yes. Have a visual as well, because
I thought you were just going to stop there. But not say that you were just going to say, well, they like Yes. I did not like Yes.
No. So
Yes, or we don't know?
I'll tell you the story the show story. Okay. But Colin's wife does all their art. Oh. So you could tell, I mean, it's a very identifiable
imagery. It's a vibe. Yes, I agree.
Cool. So they started out with five songs, and then they did, you know, they did their first couple albums, which are all pretty cool.
Five song EP.
And each one has great.
Now, did you have to go back and buy these, or did you know them
from
the start?
My first album that I got by them was The Crane Wife, because
that was the intro for many of us.
I was reading the press, and the press was like, "These guys have it together." So then I went back and I got the other stuff.
Okay,
but you know, right. Right before Crane Wife, they did the Tain.
Yeah,
five-part, one long song, basically.
This is big because you can't get this. This is not on streaming.
Oh, it isn't?
No, I looked for it.
Oh.
I don't know why, and it could just be...
Well, it's great.
It's not on Apple Music.
The one I would have gotten at the show.
Okay.
The vinyl.
Oh,
but my
vinyl?
Son already has it, so I'm like, you know, we usually try not to get too many of the same things because... Unfortunately, eventually he and my daughter will inherit my collection, and who needs two of everything?
Right. He's like, Dad, you don't really need that. He's like, I gotta get rid of all these Marillion front row club CDs.
So then came The Crane Wife, which I think was
the breakthrough album,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they had their moment
for sure. And they have
major label,
but then, you know, just some really, really good songs.
It's a good album.
Yes,
as a totality.
Front to back.
Yep.
And it, the moods that it covers, and it, it goes up and down, the instrumentation, the arrangements, everything is really cool.
And there's a deluxe edition of this.
There is. There's a whole box.
You don't have that.
No. I should have bought it when it came out.
It's available online. It's available streaming. So through Apple Music. I was listening to it yesterday. Yeah, well, the bonus stuff, because and there's a lot of it.
There's a ton.
It's a lot.
I wanted to buy that, but I didn't have a record player at the time. If my record player was, I had, you know, Forsaken Vinyl, and so I didn't get it because it was really expensive just to get those extra songs. And they did not have a download feature when they released it. You know, some of the bands would always do a download. If you buy the album, you could download, and you couldn't
do
that.
The look of disappointment is
so sad.
You can come up with every excuse in the book, but you're kicking yourself. You did not buy that,
I know.
Right?
I wish I had it.
Keeping that out for it must show up.
Then they did a bunch of EPs, which after Crane Wife, they were like, we're going to go back and do some fun.
A lot of this stuff you can't get.
Right.
Or it's hard to get, I guess, is the way.
They put it all
on the vinyl at the time. You can go to discogs.com and spend a lot of money.
Then they did Hazards of Love. And Hazards of Love was a double album.
What is this?
Oh, it's just that's a boot of rarities and stuff.
Oh, where'd you buy this?
I think I just downloaded stuff off the internet.
Oh, yeah. This is a CDR. Okay, don't call it a bootleg then. This is a mixtape of Decemberists that Jay made for himself.
Yes.
Home taping is not killing music.
Please. Then they did Hazards of Love, which was a concept album. You know, this was a full... The Crane Wife might have been sort of a concept album. Because
loosely.
Not really. Yeah. I don't think the songs interconnect in a story that I could discern.
Right.
This is specifically a story kind of thing. So... lots of different guests and vocalists and different kind of sounds and voices. You know, it's not all Colin. And
right.
Very interesting. Saw it live. They played it all straight through. I mean, this was their Tales from Topographic Oceans, because people bought the Crane Wife and then they got this and they're like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
So after Hazards, which was kind of their prog, their most... conceptually proggy, but not necessarily musically proggy. Then they went and they came back to the Americana of The King is Dead.
King is Dead.
You know, there they are on the back cover with their banjos and...
Right. Yep.
And so then they released, the Outtakes album, Long Live the King, after that. Live album. And live, they're really fun. I've seen them a number of times, and each time is a good time.
So what is this live?
This is live.
Official?
This is,
their official live album?
What is it called? We All Raise Our Voices to the Air. Okay. Double live album. Then came Cover. What a Terrible World, What a Beautiful World. And
another full release.
Another full release. And truthfully, after Hazards, the Americana stuff doesn't really float my boat as much.
Right, yeah.
And it's fine. And the I'll Be Your Girl came out next. And some of the, you know, now I hear the songs and I love all the songs.
Right.
But as an album sitting there by itself, doesn't always grab me. But there aren't bad songs on it. It's just it doesn't grab me.
I'll Be Your Girl hits me more than the one before it.
Yep.
I just think, because there's moments in there and there's a little bit of psychedelia here and there.
Yes,
I mean, it's
like
not just the cover.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like that. There's the whole, we'll cover that someday,
but
the whole psychedelia aspect of Prague.
Those three albums.
The Come Down, And what else you got there?
The last two are not official releases, but in 2007, they were going to do a tour called The Long of It and The Short of It, where they played two nights in each city.
Okay.
They managed to do Chicago, and then I believe there was I don't know why, but they canceled the rest of the tour. An interesting take, and a very proggy take, that they did one night of all short songs and then one night of all long songs, during which they covered Echoes.
Okay. Wow. There you go. Okay.
By Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
So, so I found these somewhere online. And made my own CDs of that.
Because it was for your own enjoyment.
It was the one show they did.
Wow.
These are my tickets for the...
Oh, the shows you didn't get to see. The shows I didn't
get to see.
Oh, that's cool.
And when I got the tickets, I got the t-shirt that I didn't, you know, so this is this t-shirt.
Getting creative here. Very nice. No, this is great. Why not? It's the modern version. The long of it, the short of it. Yeah. So
another cool. fun thing that they did.
And that was it? They only did those two dates of the tour? They did? Then, wow.
Yeah.
But somebody was able to tape it?
Yeah.
That's great.
So it showed up on one of the sharing sites. And I don't think that they really care because they're all over these sharing sites.
Right. Yeah.
So my dilemma right now is, you know, I've bought everything that they've done along the
Can't stop now.
Well, do I just get the vinyl or do I get the CD? At this point.
I don't know. You're putting a stake in the ground. Is that what you're doing now? You just buy vinyl? Like, you're making that statement then. If I have the choice between buying a CD and vinyl, I'm going to buy the vinyl. Are you ready to make that commitment?
I don't know if I am. The vinyl's like $35. The CD's like $12.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. But then what's going to happen? See, are we going to live long enough where we see it flip again?
Right.
Where the CDs are the...
Nobody bought those CDs. Nobody bought those CDs really
and now they're really rare. They're like the first Tori Amos Why Can't Tori Sing? That, you know, everybody used to spend gazillions of dollars for.
So another fun show that I saw with my son is they did a lottery show. Like this big giant thing that you would have with bingo filled with ping pong balls or little wiffle balls or whatever of every song they've ever done. And then other things, cover songs, Collins crowd surfs, whatever.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
He would spin the thing and pick out three balls at once.
Okay.
And they would play whatever was, they would do whatever was on the thing. And that they did it.
And that was the show?
That was the show for 33 songs.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
When was this? Do you remember? Recently? Too far in the past? What album was it for?
It wasn't an album.
They were just out?
It was probably after...
Post or pre-pandemic?
Pre,
okay.
It was after the Crane Wife tours and after the EP tours.
Okay.
It was
after the canceled, long and short of it?
It was before... it was before the
we're closing
before Hazards of Love. It was in that in between stage.
So we can get down the year. How about the month?
I don't know.
What'd it feel like out? Was it hot? Was it
You're pain in my ass. So they
that's
much
a
fun.
Wild concept. So I love that. Fun. That's fun. Yeah.
It was 2009.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's cool. I like that concept. But you know, do we know when's the full album coming out?
This new December's album is coming out, I think it's sometime in July.
Okay.
So,
and coming out means they're releasing the last song, right? Or are they releasing them?
They released the other day. Yes. And so that was another song that they played. So I'm assuming that the next song they're going to play is called, I think it's, that they're going to release is probably The White Veil.
Okay.
It's another song they played in concert.
Right. So you heard a lot of the songs from the album.
Yes.
Okay.
They just threw them in.
That's good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So I've liked them, you know, since whenever Crane Wife came out, 2006, one of the guys at work liked them. And then I had read stuff about them and it blossomed from there. And then Matt, my son, really liked them. And now my wife likes them. And so
it's a family affair.
She saw the show because we'd seen them before altogether, but she and I just went to this one and
she loved it.
She loves Colin Molloy now. She's like, he's the best front man, he's so much fun, and it's cool.
So if anybody's watching this and they are not suitably intrigued with the Decemberists and maybe weren't that familiar with them, like what would the trajectory be from a discography, like what should be those three first albums somebody should listen to? Obviously The Crane Wife is in there, right?
Crane Wife would be my
number one. Start with that.
Is really good. That was the one before that.
Yep. So that's
and this then is I the... would do their new one because I think the new one has some really strong material so far. I mean they're based out of Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of the Northwest people. I like James Mercer from the Shins is on the new, on one of the new songs, and there's other people on other songs. I think so. They have that kind of thing going. And
when should they listen to Hazard?
Once they get into them.
Okay, so after those three, if you really want to get proggy. Froggy goes to
court.
Well,
I think what I had, my trouble with Hazards was because the others' albums had so many kind of song-oriented stuff that I didn't love the singles on right. Hazard, so that right. it didn't have the hookiness that some of the other
it's a
stuff,
different but, approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I put that one at number four because I think it's suitably different than
it is.
Most of them, and it's cool. Anyways, check out the Decemberists. Two thumbs up.
Prague will find a way.
If you want it to.